her apartment window.
I was born and raised in Ukraine, and we were living on the third floor, and in the corner of our window in the kitchen, every year, house martins came and made a mud nest.
House martins are a kind of swallow that breed across much of Europe. They construct an enclosed nest from mud and spit, often under the eaves of homes and city buildings.
And my grandma would be furious because they would just make a whole big mess on the glass. And she would grumble about it and be like, oh, these darn house martins. But at the same time, we both would be glued to them and watching the parents come and feed the babies and seeing the little yellow baby mouths sticking out. And then eventually we could see each one of them leave the nest and then we would wait for them to come back the next year.
Today in Arizona, Olya leads the Nest Box program at Tucson Bird Alliance, which designs nest boxes for desert birds and helps people create nesting opportunities at home.
It's super special to be able to sit and watch their behaviors in the nest box, on an open cup nest, even in the window of your third floor apartment.
For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Hey, Scream Therapy listeners. People sometimes ask me what's been the most popular episode of Scream Therapy through the years. Well, one episode stands way above the rest. That's episode 40 with Amy Taylor of breakout Aussie punk band Amel and the Sniffers. When Amy came onto the podcast in 2001, Amel and the Sniffers were an upstart band with a dedicated following, but they weren't playing stadiums like they are now. Over the past few years, the band has gotten bigger and bigger, and the number of ears on Amy's episode grew and grew. So here it is, another listen to episode 40. Amy Taylor of Amel and the Sniffers on self-care and mental health. Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Self-care for punk musicians on tour often gets lost in the chaos and fury of the shows. It takes strong willpower and awareness to avoid the unhealthy elements of touring: drugs and alcohol, lack of sleep and food, and even on-stage injuries. Amy Taylor is the vocalist of Australian rocked-out punk band Amel and the Sniffers, a four-piece known for its killer riffs and Amy's wild dance moves and boundless energy. Despite expelling so much during the band's shows, Amy is careful to take care of herself before and after gigs. When she first found punk rock, Amy was attracted to what she calls consensual violence, releasing her anger by thrashing around in the pit and banging into other punks. Now that she's fronting Amel and the Sniffers, she hasn't stopped. Jumping down into the audience to get into the fray, she loves whipping people into a frenzy. Amy often nurses a sore throat after shows and spends a lot of time on the road by herself. She gets lonely and sometimes has dark thoughts. Using punk as an outlet, in what she calls the power of the microphone on stage, while taking care of herself off stage, Amy has found a healthy balance between the quiet and the loud.
Taylor from Australian punk band Amel and the Sniffers. Yeah, I'm the singer in that band. We've been a band since 2016. I've just always really liked live music. To me, is super important as like a community thing and being included, I guess. I think live music and like punk music and I guess whatever genre you listen to, but because I really love garage and the energy of punk, garage, hardcore, all that stuff, that's what I like and that's where I feel like I can just get rowdy and be myself. But I think it's really important because it's, for me, I kind of am like socially sort of weirdo, but when you go to gigs and stuff, you can be around heaps of different people. You can like chat with a couple of different people, but you're all together and you're all like sharing something and you're like, you know, it's like really cathartic to like flash around in a pit and get sweaty and listen to music. It's just really the peak of life in a lot of ways.
The thrashing around and being in the pit, those things were therapy for you to help with your mental health?
I think I didn't even really realize that it was until maybe even the last couple of weeks when I realized like, oh, that's probably like a big part of why I feel weird about just like a hole in my identity, because so much of my socializing always came from that. And so much of my joy came from that as well. But it's definitely a big part of my mental health and like feeling like I'm a part of something. And I guess I have heaps and heaps of energy and it's like, I do work out and stuff and I do get rid of it like that. But to get rid of it, dancing to music in any kind of capacity is just really special, I think. I grew up in Mullumbimby, which is a town in northern New South Wales. It's pretty gentrified now, which is pretty normal for everywhere, I guess. But it's like a small kind of town. It's really hippie, like super hippie slash like farmer. Growing up, there wasn't really, because it's so small, like there's like never any shows on and stuff. But then somebody introduced me to hardcore shows. So I just used to go to like local kind of like punk, hardcore, garage bands constantly because they were all ages. I really liked the consensual violence of it. And I liked that I could get rid of, I have so much energy. I liked that I could get rid of it. I liked that I could just smash it out. I don't know. I just liked that everyone could just be themselves there, I guess, in a way. And I really just like resonated with the anger of punk music and hardcore music, because growing up, like I didn't really see a lot of expressed anger, I guess, like because of the town I'm from, it was always really like suppressed. And then when I went to a hardcore show, I was like, oh, sick. Like you can feel angry at stuff because there's lots to be angry about and it's okay to express it. And I actually need to express it, be insane.
And so when you got into singing in a band, was Amel and the Sniffers your first band?
Yeah, Amel and the Sniffers is the first band, okay. Yeah.
Having this stage presence or just getting up there and doing it, how did that feel? And was there a bit of a hump to get over it at first?
To be honest, it came really naturally for me. I really, even when I was a kid and I would go to the hardcore shows, it was like only ever males on stage. So I'd be like, I want to do that. Or not even I want to do that, but it's like, I think I could do that. Like, because there was only ever really male, so I didn't know it's something I could do, but I knew that I wanted to. And then when we started the band, it was all pretty organic and like intuitive, and I didn't really get that nervous or anything, but I really found that I liked, I guess, the power of having the microphone, just being able to express myself in a performative kind of way was really, I don't know, special for me. And I never really flinched at it.
Did you find yourself going to a different place when you were doing it, or were you remembering everything? I know a lot of folks talk about dissociating when they're up on stage.
I actually reckon I disassociate. Yeah, it's kind of like meditative in a lot of ways. I'm like hyper focused, but also like I'm just not there at the same time. So it's like I'm there, but I'm also just out of body kind of thing.
Have you ever found there is feeling unsafe or?
I think for me, it's like I really like work myself up at the shows because I am like just pretty I've got all this aggression and stuff, and that's my place to get rid of it. It's like I can wind myself up and then feel just like super intense after a show or whatever. Or so rather than feeling like that was unsafe, it's more trying to like navigate calming down afterwards, because I'm just genuinely get absolutely like wound up.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So what do you do to wind down after a really hectic show?
I don't know if I have it completely figured out yet, to be honest. Sometimes it's different. Sometimes I just for a little bit. Sometimes I just like hang out with people. Sometimes I go eat food. I don't really have a toolkit for it. I just am still learning, I guess, how to work around it.
Do you sleep that night?
Yeah, I actually do.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, my sleep setup is pretty good for some reason. Most of the time, I can just shut my eyes and I'm out.
Nice. Yeah, sleep's so crucial.
Yeah.
And I guess when you're on tour, that could be a game changer.
Yeah, well, when I'm on tour, like I'm pretty militant with my health. Well, militant's probably a bit ambitious, but I just try and pay as much attention to it as I can. Like, I really like value feeling like healthy, and I really like value having like a clear mind. Just being like logical, and I really like control, and I don't like being out of control, especially like in foreign places or whatever around people I don't know. It's like I like being like aware most of the time. Yeah, on tour it's like I don't party that much. I'll like try and do like stretches, and I'll try and eat as healthy as I can, drink heaps of water, get good sleep, not drink too much and stuff, because I just personally like I just don't like the way it makes me feel that much. I lose my voice all the time, so I just got to be really careful with that, not because I really like being able to sing and stuff.
Any injuries that happen that you have to nurse afterwards when you get up there and thrash around?
Yeah, constantly, actually. Like physical injuries, like, yeah, I've torn the cartilage in my knee, gotten black eyes, chipped my teeth, everything really. But nothing too crazy. Like I've hurt my leg a couple of times and like been on limping and stuff like that. One time I had food poisoning for 2 weeks and didn't. We started the tour in Russia, which was crazy in itself. But they put us up in this really nice hotel, and there was a buffet breakfast with like all this fish. And I was like, this is cool. I'm just going to eat it. And then started the tour 2 weeks of just like terrible stomach.
Brutal.
Yeah.
You try to put a exercise and diet routine into your when you're on the road. What is the difference? Like if there's days that you can't work out or can't do those things, do you notice it quite a bit?
Yeah, I actually do. Like I just, and same in just general life as well. Like if I just get really wound up and like intense, and I can get pretty dark in the mind. But I think it'll be like after having the year in Melbourne, going back into touring, I think it'll be completely different because I've had the time to have stability here and work out proper routines and like proper exercise stuff. Being overseas will be easier. Also, I never read books before. Like, no, it was always like books. But over the last year, someone introduced me to books, and I was actually like, well, this is the best thing of my life.
You can read books now when you're touring.
Yeah. And I feel like I've learned a lot of like, because I guess I was like always focusing on like the physical agility. So if I exercise, eat healthy, drink water, sleep, I'll be sweet, which didn't always work. Over the last year, I've learned a lot about like mental agility and like, you know, just like being strong in the brain. And I think that will actually be the thing that will help me more than anything. No matter how much I work out, if I'm like just letting my thoughts run crazy, then it doesn't actually help that much, even though it does help.
So the exercising, the things that you do, those can lift the depression.
Definitely, 100%. They make my life so much better. Like, even just going for a 10-minute walk around the block when I first wake up and stuff like that, you're like, oh, life's pretty sweet. Especially when you're just like inside all the time, or like looking at a screen or in a van or in dark venues, dark vans, all that stuff, whatever. You don't get like to just do human things, which is like get light, have water, eat something green.
A lot of folks that are on the road in bands that are looking after their mental health have told me that they're really afraid of having some sort of a crisis while on the road. Have you thought about that at all? Because I know that you really go hard, and I'm sure you've had an empty tank a few times.
Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty intense workhorse in a lot of ways, and I like don't let anything ever stop me. Like I don't know when to be like, all right, Amy, chill. Like you need to book less shows or like any of that stuff. So I've definitely had intense kind of like anxiety spells or depression spells on tour where I'll play a gig and just like can't settle down, or like I had like no control over my thoughts and stuff like that. And I think everyone in the band has had like different moments of pretty bad mental health on the road. You know, we've toured for like 4 months at a time. It just can be really exhausting. And it's confusing because you're like, this is such a lucky privilege to be touring the world. And then you're like, but why do I feel so shattered? And I feel like that's what gets, that can be one of the main things that get me down, because I'm like, oh, I'm ungrateful and I should really pumped on this. But sometimes you just can't be, because you actually just need to sleep. And the biggest part as well is being isolated from your communities. Because I lose my voice a lot, I'm always kind of quite isolated because I can't communicate with people because I need to rest. And I'm there to do the show. That's what I want to do. So that's a priority. And then so I can go like months kind of thing without really having any proper human interactions, you know, chats about stuff. Community is like 15-hour flight away. So it can be really just, that's a really tough thing, I think, about touring for me. And that's why I like the mental health and like being healthy and stuff is super important, because all of that with being like in some kind of limelight, like in the attention, if my thoughts fault, I get dark on myself, then that's when like everything feels horrible. An empty balloon getting like floating around the abyss with like people constantly looking at you and stuff. So like my self-esteem just has to be like in check, or it'll just be like horrible. And it has been like, it goes down all the time and stuff. And it's like, that's pretty normal. I'm not saying that I'm like, I think I'm the best all the time, but it's just important to just be like logical about it as much as I can, and know who I am. So that I can't get lost in it all, I guess.
What do you do on the road to take care of each other as a band?
Not that much, to be honest. but we all look after each other in our own way. Like, yeah, we are like a family. When we come back from tour at the end of 2019, we lived together all throughout the pandemic and stuff. And we've just spent the last like 4 years living on each other's shoulders. So, you know, if someone's feeling down, we'll try our best to like bring them up. I don't know if we had that much emotional intelligence, or at least I didn't until probably last year. I didn't really learn any of that stuff and didn't know how to like care for other people and be like a good friend. So I feel like it'll be easier now, but we'll always ask how someone's doing and like listen to them and like try and sort them out if we can. As we get older, like we'll be able to look after each other way more, but there's take it as it comes, I guess. Because I know we all really care about each other and they really care about me. And they'll try their best, I think, to like sort it out or listen to me or like, yeah, that kind of thing.
I read in one of the articles that I read for that before I talked to you here, because I felt like I should know something about what other people are saying about you, which is important. In some of these articles, you talked about being an angry person.
Yeah, I think definitely I'm an angry person. Like I have a really short fuse and I could just be like really frustrated, which it's not always a good thing, because I can just quickly like and just get so like wound up and just, yeah, like adrenaline pumps at like the drop of a hat. It's like I was saying earlier, I suppose, I just have like all this energy, and whether it's like an anxious energy, a good energy, like a negative energy, whatever it is, I've just like got it, and I just have to keep it pretty managed, or I can just be like pretty intense, I guess.
Are you able to channel that anger into what you do?
Definitely. That's why I love this band so much. It's such a good outlet for me to just be like run around and like be angry, because I feel like in the punk community, just any kind of like heavier music community, it's like it's really a good place for people to release that, because only a small amount of things that you can get rid of your anger with. So like boxing or any kind of sports like that. But there's not actually that much. It's not really like an accepted thing, because like anger is scary. It's scary when you see someone angry. It has to just be released in the right way. And for me, at least, I think that like punk music and hardcore music is the right way to do that. Like there's a really like consensual, accepted, not violence, but that like energy and that anger within like the community and like gigs and stuff like that. At least I found when I was younger, everyone could like thrash around and punch, and then you'd move back slightly. There was like a ring of people who kind of wanted to be amongst it, but also just wanted to watch. And then there was the people who didn't want to be a part of that. They could just watch as well. Everyone's kind of there, and everyone is angry and needs to get rid of that feeling, I guess.
We as punks understand that, and mosh pits, we understand that they're very safe places, actually.
Yeah.
Safe, but very intense. But for someone who's not part of that, what have you heard from folks, thinking maybe family or somebody that didn't really know what it all meant? Do they freak out about it or do they understand it?
I think people get really surprised by it or worried by it, including people in the music community in general. There's a lot of people who are we want a gig environment to be a safe space. And I totally 100% agree with that. And I don't want anyone to ever feel unsafe. But I think, of course it would be unsafe. You get thrashed around and it's often male dominated and stuff. But to me, I've always personally felt really safe in a mosh pit. And there's really that attitude of helping each other. So if anybody ever falls down, 100% of the time they'll get lifted back up, tapped on the shoulder, say you are right, that kind of thing. There's always a care involved. The anger's never directed at anyone in particular. It's always directed just at life and the air, and everyone's just there releasing it, but no one's actually targeting anybody. Yeah, I personally have always found it really safe. And I 100% understand it's not for everybody, and it would be scary if you never know what people have been through and stuff.
Yeah, it's almost this concept, and I've written about this for the book that I'm working on, but we're given permission to scream in the punk scene, whereas in outside society, you're not allowed to scream, you're not allowed to be angry.
Yeah.
We're part of a very special community in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think understanding my emotions a little bit more or whatever, when I didn't really completely understand them a couple of years ago. It's that was just the way I was I don't know what I'm feeling. So now I can kind of be I kind of know what I'm feeling, but still. And that's a really helpful thing as well, because it's it just feels less of an uncontrolled anger then, and I can understand it and then release it rather than just flailing around being I'm angry.
So how will that change shows going forward then?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I have no idea. It's yet to be seen.
You're not going to turn into a folk singer or something?
Not at this stage, no.
Is there, in your mind, Amy talking to me and Amy on stage? Are those two separate parts of you?
For me personally, it's I always don't want it to be separate. I try really hard to just have whatever I am on stage to be as authentic to who I am at the time. Whatever, for example, I feel pretty, I feel I've changed heaps and think differently than when I did then. We played 4 shows in 16 months. And just because I went through I went through a really rough time last year, same as everybody, in that I don't want to just be the same person that I was before. I don't want to get up there and act as Amy. I want to make Amy just be Amy kind of thing. And whatever that comes out as, I just want it to be that rather than pretending to be something I was 2 years ago, or super normal for humans to evolve and stuff. And yeah, I want the stage Amy to evolve too and not separate it. But I do think that it's just a portion of myself. And because I have that release and I have that place to get rid of all that anger and say what I want to say and express myself, I feel it actually it gives me more confidence to just constantly express myself and be myself and ignore other people's judgments. And it gives me a reason to, because I'm it's super important to just be whatever I want to be, obviously without walking all over anybody else, but just expressing myself the way I need to. It's that's such an important part of good mental health, I reckon, and not feeling you have to be someone you're not, feeling just free and light. And I feel having that stage performance, upstage person, which is also me, encourages day-to-day me to do that more as well and realize how insane it is to be anything but that.
When you think back to the first show you went to when you were a youth, do you remember how you felt walking through the doors?
I can't remember. I couldn't tell you about the first one, but I know the first couple, just feeling because the town I'm from is pretty surfy or whatever, and I was just an awkward, pale, kind of blonde, scruffy head, 14-year-old or whatever I was, and everyone there, I was well, everyone's so cool, and they're all got black shirts on and look scary and stuff. And I remember the band started playing and I was just, everyone was throwing around, throwing down. And I was I'm pretty sure I would have got amongst it. To me, I was little and there was all these big blokes, and I was I just didn't care. I was I couldn't see any difference between them and me. It was just oh, sick, that's what people are doing here, I can do that too. Throw down with the big blokes and stuff. And I just felt really dope. It was just exciting. I think it was just exciting and it felt fun. And I liked that it was kind of scary. I was this is kind of scary. And I don't necessarily fit in here. Yeah, I've got surfy blonde hair and just denim cutoffs and stuff. But I was this is just cool.
And you did fit in.
Yeah, and I did fit in. And nobody So I remember someone was like, you look like Kesha. But other than that, like, everyone was just fine. Everyone was just awkward and uncomfortable and weird, just like me, which is, I think, a good lesson to remember that, like, kind of anywhere you go, everyone's just like awkward and uncomfortable and like not that self-assured and like just wants to have a chat most of the time. And it's like, it was the same there. You know, maybe like that chick with like the black hair and like the baseball cap and like that's glaring at me just thinks the same thing I do.
That was my conversation with Amy Taylor of Amyl and the Sniffers, amylandthesniffers.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. The support from our awesome community helps keeping the station diverse and independent. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A new paint job on your house could be an opportunity to make your home look and feel a little cooler. So-called cool exterior walls are coated with paints or other materials that efficiently reflect the sun's rays and emit heat that's been absorbed.
The material stays cooler in the sun, and this helps to cool the outdoor air around the exterior wall, as well as reduce the amount of solar heat gain into the building.
Audrey McGarrell is with the Cool Roof Rating Council. The nonprofit tests how roofing materials and exterior paints and finishes perform as cool surfaces. Light colors naturally reflect more visible sunlight, so many cool wall products are white. But cool walls come in darker colors, too. Some paints are made with special pigments that reflect the sun's near-infrared radiation, which is invisible but transmits heat. Those paints do cost more, but McGarrell says the investment often pays off over time because cool walls help cut air conditioning costs. So she suggests people in warm climates consider cool walls when it's time to repaint.
Thinking about how comfortable and energy efficient your home is going to be 10, 15, 20 years down the road, it's important to consider all aspects of resilience to heat.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of a community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at EmbarkSustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at EmbarkSustain.